Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
This war, we're not winning it. If you speak a word of what I'm about to show you, you will be executed for high treason.
It's beautiful.
It's the greatest encryption device in history, and the Germans use it for all communications.
Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Let me try, and we'll know for sure.
Mr. Turing, do you know how many died because of it?
I don't.
Three. While we've been having this conversation.
Gentlemen, meet Mr. Turing.
We ought to work together, then. I'm afraid these men would only slow me down.
Popular at school, were you?
We're short on staff.
We get more staff, then. You have 6 minutes to complete the task.
Is anything possible?
No, it takes me 8.
5 minutes and 34 seconds.
You said to do it in under 6. What is it that we're really doing?
We're going to break an unbreakable Nazi code and win the war.
Oh.
You know, to pull off this irascible genius routine, one actually has to be a genius.
I'm designing a machine that will allow us to break every message, every day, instantly.
You're going to need all the help you can get, and they are not going to help you if they do not like you.
Have you decrypted a single German message?
You will
never understand the importance of what I am creating here.
Our patience has expired.
No!
If you fire Helen, well, then you'll have to fire me.
Me too.
And me.
You better bloody work.
Helen, you do not have to do this alone.
What are you doing? What's going on?
The Navy thinks that one of us is a Soviet spy.
You've got more secrets than the best of them.
What if I don't fancy her in that way?
Can't tell anyone, Helen. It's illegal.
I'm just a mathematician.
Sometimes it is the people who no one imagines anything of who do the things that no one can imagine.
Wow. Wow, this is a good movie. I'm Melissa Locke, and I really love God flicks. I am with Brian on that, and many of you, I think. And I'm excited this year, after getting all my traveling done up front in the summer, I will be here for all 4 God flicks movies this month. So I'm thrilled, and I hope a lot of you can make a lot of them as well. Today, in fact, we've got lots of us being Jacob's Well around the country, around the world. Chris and Greg are traveling, and we're so excited to have Brother Timothy here, and I really appreciate you sitting with me up here. Thank you. And also the New York contingent of Jacob's Well, our high school youth and some adult leaders, as Brian mentioned, are on their way home today after what looks like a pretty great trip, so we're excited to welcome them back. Thanks for the popcorn. Thanks for the setup, everyone. Glad to be here with all of you. So I got to tell you, I really probably won't really say anything new today. I think you've probably heard all this before, and you know this. And it makes me think of my friend Phil Quanbeck, an elder colleague that I had the privilege of working with, said once, "The older I get, the more sure I become of fewer and fewer things." The more sure I become of fewer and fewer things. And I think that maybe explains why we keep talking about the same thing over and over at church. But we need to review these fewer things, these truest things, over and over. We might get it in our head with a certain way of saying it, but hearing it from another angle, hearing it from another voice, hearing it through the eyes of a movie, through a song, We need to keep hearing and remembering these things. So that's why I come on Sundays here and gather with you. And I hope this is a day where you are reminded in a new way and touched by what God wants to say to us and with us. Through amazing movies like the one we're going to watch today. Imitation Game won Best Adapted Screenplay, which I always kind of brushed off before. I thought, oh, it's not the best movie. It's not best actor. But now, wow, I have a huge appreciation for the decisions that had to be made to put a two-hour movie together that reflects and honors the complex life of someone like Alan Turing. So Alan Turing is the main character. He's played very capably by Benedict Cumberbatch. Where do you know him from? Anyone? Sherlock, yeah. He is fabulous. And yeah, what else was the other? 12 Years a Slave, yeah. He's good. So Alan Turing worked with a team for the British government during World War II, and their job was to break the Nazi code machine that was called Enigma. And in the process, he is credited with creating the first computer, the first digital computer. That changed the course of the war and, of course, changed the course of history. And since that's really such a big deal, I thought that I would explain all the formulas and draw some diagrams. And there's a 3x5 card that you can take notes on, and then there'll be a test, okay? So hold on to that. You might want to start. Of course, there's more to this movie than breaking this code machine. There are many codes going on, many codes being broken. And so I want to introduce you to Alan Turing. When you get into the movie, you realize that most of the movie is actually being told by Turing in an interrogation room in a Manchester police department. The local detective got suspicious when he went to Alan's apartment after Alan's neighbors had called and saying there's this ruckus and he was burglarized, and he goes in and he realizes this guy doesn't even want our help and he seems very secretive, and he ends up uncovering that he's got this classified military record, and he's thinking, why would a math professor have all these secrets and have a classified military record? And he really gets captivated by this person and starts to read his work, and it turns out that his underlings, trying to do him a favor, and I don't know if he thought it was a favor or not, but they end up digging up some dirt about Alan Turing and getting him arrested on the basis of the laws that were banning homosexuality at the time in Britain. So Alan Turing is brought in for questioning with this detective, and meet Alan.
Good machines ever think as human beings do. Most people think not. You're not most people.
Ryan knows the trick for this. So Alan is going to explain the imitation game when he starts talking. And he says a lot, so you need to be paying attention, which is the first line of the movie. Who's seen it, by the way? Wow, a lot of you. Good. Are you paying attention?
You.
So this will be up in a second.
Could machines ever think as human beings do?
Most people say not.
You're not most people.
Well, the problem is you're asking a stupid question.
I am?
Of course machines can't think as people do. A machine is different from a person. Since they think differently. The interesting question is, just because something thinks differently from you, does that mean it's not thinking? Do we allow for humans to have such divergences from one another? You like strawberries, I hate ice skating, you cry at sad films, I am allergic to pollen. What is the point of different tastes, different preferences, if not to say that our brains work differently, that we think differently? And if we could say that about one another, then why can't we say the same thing for brains of copper and wire, steel.
And that's this big paper you're on. What's it called?
The Imitation Game.
Right, that's what it's about.
Would you like to play?
Play?
It's a game. A test of sorts. For determining whether something is a machine or a human being.
How do I play?
Well, there's a judge and a subject. The judge asks questions and, depending on the subject's answers, determines who he is talking with, what he is talking with, and all you have to do is ask me a question.
What did you do during the war?
I worked in a radio factory.
What did you really do during the war?
Are you paying attention?
And they begin to play. One man hearing the complicated story of another. Professor Barry Cooper, who first wrote the book, I think, the first one on Turing's life, and an admirer of this movie, he said about Turing's life, "It was spent looking for human roots to the incomputable, both mathematically and personally." And I think you can hear some of his questions in that clip. Can a machine imitate a human? Are humans more than machines? And the question I want to focus on today is, can we really expect much of people and of this life? How you answer that leads you to play the game of life in two potentially very different ways. One of my favorite Jacob's Well-isms is about games. Does anybody know what it might be? God doesn't play games. God doesn't play games. This is a good one. You got to know this. But today, I want you to forget about that one and entertain the idea that God does play a game. And it's a game that God plays wholeheartedly, and it's very different from the imitation games that we learn to play. And in fact, God is dying for us to join in this game. The imitation game started early for Alan Turing. Here's a scene that starts in a lunchroom at his school.
The problem began, of course, with the carrots. The carrots are orange. The peas are green. They mustn't touch. It is because it feels good. Humans find violence deeply satisfying. But remove the satisfaction, and the act becomes hollow.
Turing?
Oh, awful. Hard to watch. Who would do this to someone? And the answer, I'm afraid, is us. We do it to ourselves. We put ourselves in constrained, tight spaces where we can hardly breathe. We put our thinking in these spaces, and we put others in these boxes. And we do it in pretty subtle forms, a lot more subtle and easy to rationalize than they did. But it is just as destructive. And it's not nice. Why do we do this? We know we don't want to play these games, but we do it anyway, and a lot of times without even realizing it, frankly. So I think today's a good day to look at how do we know when we're playing these imitation games that constrain and stick people in these awful boxes and ourselves. So I want to start, the telltale sign of the imitation game, I think, could be a box. And the first thing we put in a box is our thinking. So, of course, to some extent, we need to put our thinking in a box. We need language to communicate. We need to define some roles and some systems in our lives to function effectively and for things to work, right? But eventually, the boxes can start to become so important and ends in themselves instead of ways to live and communicate and have life, right? So the next clip that we're going to watch here shows this tension between the usefulness of boxes and when they start really getting more in the way. So Alan is not in school anymore. He is an adult. He has started his work with the team at Bletchley Park Radio Factory. Actually, they're trying to build this machine. He's got a team that's headed by Hugh Alexander, and they're trying to break this code machine, but not quite working together yet. Alan had been working separately and said, I need these materials, and put in this request, and here's what happened. You'll see his commanding officer, Officer Denniston.
This is unacceptable.
If you wish to discuss the complaint, I suggest to make a proper appointment.
Alexander, complaint? No, Hugh Alexander has denied my requisition for parts and equipment that I need to build the machine I've designed.
Your fellow codebreakers are refusing to work with you, or they filed a formal complaint.
It is inspired by an old Polish code machine, only this one is infinitely more advanced.
If you don't respond to the complaint, I shall have to take it up with the Home Office.
Put those files by my desk.
Fine, my response is they're all idiots. Fire them and use the savings to fund my machine. I only need about £100,000.
£100,000? Why are you building a machine?
It's highly technical. You wouldn't understand.
I suggest you make the effort to try.
Enigma is an extremely well-designed machine. Our problem is that we're only using men to try to beat it. Now, what if only a machine can defeat another machine?
Well, that's not very technical. Hugh Alexander is in charge of your unit. He said no, and that is that.
I simply don't have time for this.
Have you ever won a war, Turing? I have. Do you know how it's done? Order, discipline, chain of command. You're not at university any longer. You are a very small cog in a very large system, and you will do as your commanding officer instructs.
Who is your commanding officer?
Winston Churchill, number 10 Downing Street, London, SW1. You have a problem with my decision. You can take it up with him.
Order, discipline, chain of command. This is what wins wars. Yes, it is necessary to some extent. We do need these boxes to survive and function, but again, when do they stop being helpful for actual life and start becoming the end game? I think it's when maybe at best we want to play it safe, or maybe we're a little lazy, and at worst it's when we feel self-righteous and want to be right and in control. We don't want new ideas because it's really kind of too much work to bring more into the way I understand the world already. It's hard to look at things in new ways. It's inefficient sometimes. It's risky. It's messy. And really, it's just easier to kind of accept a lot of things how they are without thinking. I got to take a trip of a lifetime this summer with my nieces to London and Paris. And on that trip, I got to stand in a lot of lines in women's bathrooms. And it seems like a mundane example, but I'm sharing it anyway. So a lot of times you're in a line, and you're like, yeah, this is how it is in women's bathrooms. There's a line. You stand in line for a long time, and you just do it. And then you get up to the front, and you're like, God darn it, there is an empty stall that whole time. Like, we've all been waiting, and there's been this, and sometimes there's that one out-of-the-box thinker that, like, bends down, makes a fool of herself, and is like, does anybody want to go in there? But most of us, we're just waiting in line, you know. And how much do we do that with our family systems or, the holidays? We always have done it this way. I might not like it, but I'm not going to make waves. I'm not going to think about it differently because that's how it is. Communication patterns at work, maybe they're not the best, but who am I to change it? It's better to just stay under the radar, play it safe. Don't expect much, right? I'm seeing the sailboat. That's not good. So the other thing, I mean, when we get our thinking into these boxes, we kind of need to build up systems to make it all work, right? And they get pretty elaborate. You know, we get entire nations and military systems and social structures, and we get church institutions. And you can see how those become boxes, too, and they lose their usefulness of life-bringing, and they become boxes rather than doors. So we are going to watch a clip when it's up. This next one that we are going to see is when Alan, he innovated within the chain of command system, and he ended up getting put in charge of the entire team. And he unfortunately still is just dismissing all these people that are part of his team. And he's frankly being quite unlikable along the way. The war is being lost. A lot of people are starving in Britain, and they are not getting anywhere with this machine, and it seems like an impossible task. And so I like that this next clip actually shows the urgency of their work. And so you can roll it.
Some people thought we were at war with the Germans. Incorrect. We were at war with the croc. Britain was literally starving to death. The Americans sent over 100,000 tons of food every week, and every week the Germans would send our desperately needed bread to the bottom of the ocean. Our daily failure was announced at the chimes of midnight, and the sound would haunt our unwelcome dreams. Tick, tock, tick.
What just happened?
Midnight. All the work we've done today is useless. Oh, but don't worry. We have a few hours before tomorrow's messages start flooding in. And we start all over again.
From scratch.
I'm so sick of this. 4 hours rewiring his plugboard matrix. 3 hours yesterday on rotor positions.
Don't go over there.
Look, John. No.
If this job wasn't already impossible before, it bloody well is now.
You don't.
Damn you and your useless machine.
My machine is how we are going to win.
Really? This machine?
Hmm?
Are you talking about this bloody machine?
You don't stop!
You arrogant bastard. You could help us. You could make this go faster, but you won't.
He's right, Alan. There are actual soldiers out there trying to win an actual war. My brother protects food convoys in the Navy. My cousins fly RAF patrols. All my friends, they're all making a difference while we just while away our days producing nothing. Because of you.
My machine will work.
Come on, Peter.
Oh, it's tough to watch. The world is waiting, and Alan is isolating himself, not letting anyone help him go in it alone. The effects are not pretty on him or on anyone else. Being a gay man and likely on the autism spectrum, Alan Turing was painfully good at exposing the games that people played. He observed that people don't say ever what they mean. Language just seemed like another code to him. And he learned early on that certain deep parts of himself, his intellect, his homosexuality, needed to be hidden. They were not acceptable. So it's no wonder that he decided the best course of action in this life was to go it alone and not expect a whole lot of other people. And we fall into this too. We learn that doing it yourself is noble. We learn early on, doing yourself is best. Don't depend on other people. Don't show anyone your weaknesses. You know, do it all, do it well, and don't let them see a sweat, right? I mean, these are held up as values in our lives. And we don't want to bother people. We don't want to disappoint people. And people really can hurt you if you do that at worst. And at best, they can just get in your way. They get in your way of what your agenda is or what you think is most important, what you already know. I think parents do this. We box ourselves away from our kids sometimes because we have isolated ourselves with our own agenda box, and it's very important stuff, very important. And maybe it's possible that our kids are not just trying to annoy us when they're pulling on our pant leg and we're on the phone or trying to get something done or having a temper tantrum or maybe even more destructive behavior. Maybe it is their way to get us to come out of our box and connect with them. And maybe there are other people in your life that seem to be misbehaving, but really they're trying to get your attention and say, I want to connect with you. Come out. Hello. Be with me. So I think we do that. And so by this time, our thinking's in a box. We've isolated ourselves in our boxes. And our world is getting smaller and smaller and tighter and tighter. And the next thing we do is make sure everyone else is in a box, too. A nice, neat, tidy box. Who was that singer? Melvina Reynolds saying about it. We like to have people in tidy boxes. The next scene is an example of it'll be really obvious. Turing has used an unconventional method to identify a couple new candidates for his team because when he was put in charge, he fired a couple people and decided, oh, maybe we should get a couple new recruits, and I have a good idea of how to do it. So here's when they're interviewing potentials. Almost. Dang. Humans are way better than machines. So you're going to see Keira Knightley here. There was a real Joan, and she wasn't that cute. She wasn't as...
ice skating you...
So who are they?
All sorts, really. Teacher, an engineer, a handful of students.
It's really loud.
And you think they're qualified for the match because they're good at crossword puzzles?
Well, they say they're good, and now we shall find out, won't we? In order to aid your efforts, there is to the right of you a green scratch card book. You are to make notes in that. Gentlemen, you have 6 minutes in which to complete the puzzle, at which point I will...
Pardon, ma'am, this room's restricted.
Apologies for my tardiness, the bus caught a flat tire.
May I continue, please? Thank you.
You're not allowed in here, ma'am.
Oh, but I'm only a few minutes late and...
The secretary's at head upstairs. This room's for the candidates.
May I get on with this now, please?
I am a candidate.
For what position?
The letter didn't say precisely.
Yes, so secretaries are to head upstairs.
It did say that it was top secret.
What is going on?
I solved a crossword puzzle in the newspaper, and I got this letter saying that I was a candidate for some sort of mysterious job. My name's Joan Clark.
Miss, did you really solve this puzzle yourself?
What makes you think I couldn't solve the puzzle myself?
His box made him think she couldn't solve the puzzle himself. He had her nailed. She was a secretary, right? We do this, It's nice for us if a person who's different from me is also smart or attractive or good in some way, then I must not be smart or attractive or good. That's kind of, I think, how we start the game we play. Or if they win, then I lose. And we like to define people because it's a way to control other people. And face it, it's just easier, more efficient, more convenient, basically, to keep other people in nice tidy boxes. And if we let them in, they're going to mess with our thinking. They're going to mess with our comfortable world that we've built up around us. So we do this. We contain each other. And it, after a while, can choke the life right out of them. In the movie, there are boxes for women, homosexuals, odd people, autistic people, geniuses, Jews, allies, Axis. I could keep going just from the movie, but what are the ones that we do? What else? Give me some other boxes that we use now. Throw them out. Political season is coming, right? Democrats, Republicans. I actually can't really hear you guys. You have to yell. Conservatives and liberals, city people, suburban people, vegans, engineers, I mean, musicians, Christians, terrorists, what? Teenagers, yeah, kids, childish, yeah, mm-hmm. So, yeah, there we go. We've got our boxes. We are now down in a pit. I mean, did anyone else look at that picture and think coffin? He's in under the floor. It's like a coffin. And it doesn't take long to realize we do not want to play this game. It does not lead to good places. But the world is so full of these boxes, and we hardly realize we're doing it, and we're so good at them. Can we really expect any more? Yeah. God says, yeah, we can. I'm coming in. I'm coming right in to where your boxes are. I will take any crack you give me to remind you that there is a better game happening. It's always been happening. I want you to play. Let's see an example of this new game.
I didn't learn this on my own, of course. I had help. Christopher helped.
Alan, are you all right? It's not my fault. The carrots got him with the peas, and I'm sorry, I won't let them do it again.
They're getting worse.
They only beat me up because I'm smarter than they are.
No, they beat you up because you're different.
Mother says I'm just an odd duck.
And she's right. But, you know, Alan, sometimes it's the very people who no one imagines anything of, who do the things no one can imagine.
Did you hear that? I actually want you to say it. I'm going to say it like you're doing wedding vows. Just repeat after me. Sometimes it's the very people no one imagines anything of. Who do the things no one can imagine. And this is where I really do want you to write on your 3x5 card. Write this quote on there. Take it home and keep it with you. And I hope it stays around your house and gets all ratty, but I really hope it gets into your heart. And we'll spend a lifetime letting this phrase into our hearts. I think it's the refrain of the movie, and I think it's the refrain of God and life. Christopher changed the game. Did you see that? He went to a place of death for Alan, and it became a place of life because of Christopher. What else died in there besides maybe Alan's own sense of his worth? Also, his willingness to be bullied by violence died because Christopher helped him. The bullies looked at Alan. They saw an odd duck. He acted funny. He talked funny. They had to nail him into that box like a nobody to prove that they were somebody. But Christopher changed it. Christopher literally and figuratively unboxed Alan. He took the lid off and said, yeah, you are an odd duck, and that's good. That's okay. I need you to be odd. The world needs it. So he saw Alan with imagination, with possibility, and I think this is God's game, and it's on the top. We're swinging up the up the curve that you have on your notes there, if you're taking notes. And we are going to talk about the imagination game now. In this game, there is nothing to prove, just a life to live. This is the game that's always been going on, and it can't be played alone, not even by God. So Jesus, if you read any of the Gospels right now, the soap readings that we are having out there as Jacob's Well, a way to read this book and wrestle with it yourself. The readings are from Luke right now, which is one of the tellings of Jesus' life. And throughout this, you can just see story after story of the religious leaders trying to trap Jesus into these boxes with their rules and how things should be. And Jesus continually just doesn't go there and changes the game. People who were supposed to be God's people were the best at the boxes, and I think we still are, unfortunately. Most people really didn't imagine much of Jesus at the time. He was the guy they knew. He was from Nazareth. They knew his brothers and his mothers. But Jesus did something unimaginable. And here's what it is. He imagined something of us. He came into our boxes with us and imagined us out of them. And here's the kicker. He said, I imagined you to life. I imagined you out of your box. And now I need you to imagine with me. Play with me. So one of the players with Jesus when he was alive was Peter, one of his disciples. And after Jesus' death, he wrote a letter. And in the letter, he says this. We need to be players. We need to be imaginers. He says, but you are the ones chosen by God. God's instruments to work and speak out, to tell others of the night and day difference God made for you. We are made to be game changers. And this game matters. It is a night and day difference. It's the difference between the dark, closed, coffin-y type lives and a sunlit, colorful, vibrant world full of all different people and different ideas, living and breathing. It's the difference between hustling to prove our worth and being worth playing with just because we are. Because God loves us. Because God loves us. Because God loves us. See another glimpse of Christopher being a game changer in Alan's life. Oh, we're waiting.
What's that you're reading?
It's about cryptography.
Like secret messages.
Not secret. That's the brilliant part. Messages that anyone can see, but no one knows what they mean, unless you have the key.
How's that different from talking?
Talking?
When people talk to each other, they never say what they mean. They say something else. And we're expected to just know what they mean. Only I never do. How's that different?
Alan, I have a funny feeling you're going to be very good at this.
Love that. Christopher didn't try to fix him. He gave him a book. He didn't explain how to act more appropriately or communicate in a more socially acceptable way. The imagination game isn't about imagining this certain future and then telling someone how to get there. It's about seeing people right where they are and really being with them, even in the boxes, and seeing the possibility there. Seeing all that there is to be lived, learned, shared, enjoyed in and with this person. Christopher, I think, opened a door of possibility that Alan couldn't see for himself. We need to be imagined like that. Are you opening doors for people, or are you putting them in boxes? You know you're playing the imagination game when you make an effort to really be with and really see people. Have you been imagined like this by someone? I bet you remember it. I bet you remember it well. It's eyeball to eyeball. These people see you and they know you. I know these people for me. They are people I can go to when I'm stuck in a corner, when I'm playing comparison games, when I'm hustling for approval or keeping my thinking way too small. These people look at me and they're with me and they imagine me out of that place. A couple of them got me here today. Thank you. I was about to just have you all watch the movie. So we need these people. We all need these people. And I want to say that Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram are not ways to be with and see people. They're not ways to be seen and be known. They're good, and they have their place, but they can also be very lacking. We need that face, eyeball-to-eyeball time. And when we connect like this with others, instead of being isolated in these boxes, we find ourselves through connection. This is so true, but yet we're so trained about to do it ourselves and be self-sufficient and not need people. So I just want to challenge you. Next time you say, oh, I'll just do it myself, or I'll just order it online, or I'll go through the self-checkout, try the person. Ask for help. Use the people around you, because that's what they're there for. That's what we're made for, to do this together. From a recent conference that I learned about from my friend Jeanette, there was all these practitioners and people saying, how does wellness work? What does it look like? They had a wellness conference in Minneapolis. And the summarizing statement from this whole event, from all these different fields of study, was, when I becomes we, even illness becomes wellness. It is transformational. Connection is a game changer. So a couple more clips here. This one is another eyeball-to-eyeball moment when Alan is finally letting himself out of the box. He's letting his team members out of the box. And they're trying to get this machine to work better.
If you run the wires across the plugboard matrix diagonally, it will eliminate rotor positions 500 times faster.
That's actually not an entirely terrible idea.
I think that was Alan for thank you.
That's my sandwich.
You don't like sandwiches?
They're becoming a team. And this is going to lead to that last fill-in on your curve up. Instead of thinking in boxes, we get innovation, new ideas, and creativity. Together, this group of people imagined themselves out of those boxes, and it really mattered. It changed the course of history. So our innovations might not be that big, but they can make a big difference. And I'll tell you a personal story from a seemingly small conversation, a small innovation in my own thinking that was game-changing for me. I was just, if you can believe this, I'm sure it'll be shocking, kind of like a good student pleaser, never do anything wrong, get A's kind of kid. And my parents were both teachers. And I got home, and my place I'd talk to my dad would be sitting on his bed while he was organizing his closet and pulling out his clothes for the next day. And I said, Dad, I got a D. I got a D on my algebra test. He was like, oh, okay, well, what happened? I said, well, there's this formula. I didn't quite know how it worked. He said, well, do you know how it works now? Yeah. Well, what's the problem? And I was don't really remember what I did next, but when I think back, it's kind of like this moment of, oh, what's the problem? Maybe this isn't a game about getting external stamps of approval and looking good in the eyes of others. Maybe this game is actually about learning stuff. Maybe it's about making mistakes and asking for help and trying again. Can you see the different trajectory that I was sent on from that simple, small conversation? So it makes a big difference. And this imagination game is important, but it also is not always easy and fun. So as we close, just a couple of thoughts about how this game works and what it involves. I think when we decide to live and love this way with imagination, we wish every decision would become crystal clear and we would always know what to do, and we could do this to everyone and everyone would want to be imagined and they would accept our presence with them. But it's not like that. Being game changers will require courage, calculation, and sacrifice. So watch this clip, which is, you've already seen it in the trailer, and you just have to watch it over and over. It's good.
Turing? Turing, open the bloody door.
No.
I open the door or we'll break it down.
I can't let you in. I
cannot let you interfere.
Go on, then.
Turn that thing off.
No. Don't, please. 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 Please.
No.
No. No.
Well, it seems that your great big expensive machine doesn't work.
It does.
Wonderful. So you broke an enigma, then?
It was just... still working.
This is my associate from the Home Office. See, £100,000 is rather a lot of money. And he's here to see what you have to show for it.
You will never understand the importance of what I am creating here.
Have you decrypted any German messages? A single one? Can you point to anything at all that you've achieved? Oh, your funding is up, and our patience has expired. It's with such great pleasure that I am finally able to say this. Alan Turing, you're fired. Please escort Mr. Turing from the premises.
No.
I beg your pardon.
If you fire Alan, well, then you'll have to fire me, too.
What on earth are you saying?
Trust me when I tell you there is no one who would rather say this less than I do, but he's right. Alan is right. His machine can work, and it's probably the best chance that we've got.
God, it's beyond belief.
If you fire them, you'll have to fire me too.
And me.
We're the best cryptographic minds in Britain. Are you going to fire us all? Commander, at least give us some more time. 6 months, and if the machine doesn't produce any results that we need, then we'll go back to doing things the old way. How about that?
One month. And then so help me God, you're all gone. I'll leave him. Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, and Alan, your machine, it better bloody work.
And, you know, honestly, it doesn't always work. We try to do the right thing, And that's different from getting the right outcome. We don't always know that it's going to work, so it takes courage. Alan had to believe his machine would work when no one else believed it. And his team took a risk and stood with him. It takes calculation, it takes thoughtfulness to know what is the right thing to do and not just what I feel like doing. We have to use our brains. And we're going to make mistakes, we're going to have to recalculate, because there is usually not just one right way. We need to think about things and use our people to figure stuff out. Finally, sacrifice. My friend Kirk watched the movie, and his question was, what's the calculation of sacrifice? And I loved that. God's math is different from ours. He talks about when we give away our life is when we find it. The first shall be last. Sacrifice. It doesn't always make sense, but we know it's the right thing. So the boxes of British society tragically ended up killing Alan Turing. He was horribly forced to choose between prison and hormonal therapy to treat his homosexuality. And he chose the hormone therapy. And in his last days, and for him and for far too many people in our history, and still now, an integral part of who they are, their identity, and their humanity is not acceptable. And it didn't seem possible to expect anything of himself, of this world. He was isolated. He committed suicide, and we lost an amazing mind and spirit. Do you know how many people have taken their own lives because they had given up on the idea that they could expect more of life and of themselves? 3 in the time that we've been gathered. It is urgent that we change the game, that we unlearn these imitation games and start imagining each other. And it doesn't have to be huge. You don't have to invent the first computer. I love this last clip. We can all think of many places of death in this world that need big doses of imagination, but sometimes the smallest dose starts something and creates a kernel of hope. So look at these people in the bomb shelters of London during the war. See what you see. Actually kind of dark. You couldn't see the faces, but did you see the guy playing the accordion and the people doing crossword puzzles? We are created with a responsibility, the ability to respond even in the darkest places with imagination. What is your crossword puzzle? What is your accordion? You don't have to have all the answers, but you can imagine more than what we see and create hope. So, and I don't want this to just be a nice thought today. I want you to actually do this and change the game this week. So there's a homework assignment on the bottom of your Sunday paper, and it has 3 jobs for you. So this week, to unbox your thinking, and you can maybe use your little index card and start writing ideas on it right now. What is something I could approach in a new way? Unbox your thinking. Drive a different way. Brush your teeth differently. I don't know. Maybe it's really a big thing. Who could help me with something important? Don't isolate yourself in a box. Let someone help you this week. And who can I see in a new light? Let someone out of a box that you've put them in.